This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Yesterday on the program, we heard from Mark Olsky, a semi-retired physician from the Madison area. He was one of three babies born 70 years ago in desperate circumstances. Their mothers had been sent to almost certain death at the Mauthausen concentration camp in German-occupied Austria. Against unlikely odds, they were born and survived, and their mothers did as well.
The camp was liberated 70 years ago yesterday by a squad attached to the U.S. Army's 11th Armored Division, the Thunderbolts. That squad was led by Sergeant Albert Kosiak.
Today, a book about the three babies, their mothers, and the camp's liberation is published in the United States. British author Wendy Holden joins us via Skype from the U.K., and we're joined in the studio by the late Sergeant Kosiak's son, Larry Kosiak, who lives in Lake Geneva. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you.
Wendy Holden, what first led you to explore this story, the story of these three mothers?
It was a chance discovery. I was reading something online late at night and came across an article, I think in a Canadian newspaper, actually. It was an obituary about a woman who had died in Auschwitz, and it said that she'd given birth to a dead baby there. And I'm very interested in war and history. I've written a number of books about remarkable women in war, and for a while I was a war correspondent myself for an English newspaper. So I was fascinated by that, and I thought I'd never come across anything about babies being born in the Holocaust before. So I did a quick Google search and came up with the name Eva Clark, who was one of the three babies I write about, whose mother, Anka, was Czech and who'd had quite an extraordinary experience prior to giving birth to Eva at the gates of this particular notorious concentration camp in Austria.
Well, so with that one idea and that one person in mind, how did you set about finding out whether there were others?
I didn't expect there to be others at all. Having spent a day with Eva and listened to her story, I couldn't imagine how she'd survived, let alone anybody else. I just didn't think that it was possible. And certainly on my research online, I hadn't found any others that had survived. So I believed her story to be unique. And at the end of a day together, which was very emotional for her and actually for me, I found it so moving. I asked her if she would let me give me the honor of writing her story and her mother's story, and I told her that I believed it to be unique, and she laughed and told me that there were two other babies that she had chanced upon 5 years previously when they all independently went to Mauthausen for the 65th anniversary of the liberation and wanted to try to meet some of the last American liberators, and there they discovered that two other babies had survived the same hellish journey. And it was extraordinary because each of them were only children. Their mothers never had other babies, and they instantly became siblings of the heart.
These were about the most difficult circumstances imaginable. How did you approach these surviving subjects? I mean, how willing was at first Eva Clark and then the others to share their stories?
I don't think I've ever written a book or done any research where people have been so open and honest and willing to share their stories with me. Right from that first encounter with Eva, when I asked her if I could write her mother's story, she reached across, squeezed my arm and told me, "I've been waiting for you for 70 years. And it really does still seem remarkable to me that in all the 70 years since the end of that war and since all the books that have been written about the Holocaust, that this story never came to light. To think that anybody could have hidden their pregnancies from the Nazis under such close scrutiny, daily scrutiny, by people who would have willingly either killed them immediately for the discovery or sent them back to Auschwitz to be gassed was amazing in itself. But for them to have existed all that time on really subsistence rations, these three mothers, and still have been able to give birth to babies that were, you know, well enough to survive, albeit very weakened and only 3 pounds at birth, made it so unique for me, really.
This is probably an obvious question in retrospect, but why was it so important for these women to hide their pregnancies?
It's very interesting because individually, although they'd had long experience under Nazi regimes in their various cities and ghettos that they'd been in, then none of them were prepared for what they encountered at Auschwitz. But it was so brutal. From the moment the cattle wagon doors opened, there was so much screaming and shouting and so many terrified people. And then they saw some of their fellow inmates shaven-headed in striped uniforms, emaciated, that they instinctively knew that they were in the presence of danger. Although when they were themselves stripped and shaved and paraded naked in front of Dr. Joseph Mengele, who was known as the Angel of Death, and he asked each of them, "Are you pregnant, pretty lady?" At that point, they didn't know whether if they said they were, it would save them, or whether if they said they were, it would kill them. And some people, I'm sure, some of those women lined up before him, said they were in the hope that it might save them, when of course the opposite was true, or even worse, they were then sent to the experimentation wing. But these three mothers, individually and without any prompting from anybody else or any previous experience of anything like the horrors of Auschwitz, all of them just instinctively felt that they had to deny the pregnancies and then they had to hide the pregnancies. And they hid their pregnancies to the point that Mark's mother, Rachel, was actually with three of her sisters throughout the war. Incredibly, they all survived too, but they didn't even know she was pregnant, even though she shared a bunk with one of them for 7 months. Her sister didn't know she was pregnant because Rachel felt that she had to hide the news and hide the information from everybody for fear of incriminating them or causing them to be in some sort of trouble with their SS officers.
The timing was also important. The three babies who survived all had really a variety of things work in their favor.
They did. I mean, I asked one of the, in fact, Rachel's sister, Sally, is still alive, and I flew to Nashville, Tennessee to interview her. And I asked her what it was that she felt that had really allowed them to survive when so many didn't. And she looked at me and smiled and said it was just luck. And I think that's so true of a lot of these, the people I've spoken to, they were just lucky. You know, with one look or one misstep, you could stumble or fall or attract the attention of an SS guard who would then maybe shoot you or beat you to death. For some reason, these women, you know, were lucky enough not to do that. And along the way, various events and, as you say, the fortune of timing helped them. I mean, for example, had they gone to Auschwitz, you know, a few months earlier, then there wasn't such a need for slave labor by the Nazis towards the end of the war, and they probably would have gone straight to the gas chamber regardless. Had they been discovered before Auschwitz was liberated, they would have been sent back to Auschwitz to be killed. And in fact, I write about one poor woman who had hid her pregnancy from Mengele, had been at Auschwitz, and was discovered while Auschwitz was still open. And when she was sent back to Mengele, he treated her and her baby in the cruelest possible way because he was so angry that she had slipped through the net, and he basically forced her to watch her baby starve to death.
Larry Koziak, this is the point at which your father's role came in. What was his role in the war?
He was in the 11th Armored Division, Thunderbolt Division, small tank, and he was a sergeant of a platoon of 23 men. And at the time, he was on a mission. This was near the end of the war, of course, and he was on a mission to check the stability of the bridges because this was almost a line of demarcation where the Russian Army and the American Army were going to meet. And his mission was to check the bridges, and he came upon the Goosen camp, and he thought it was, you know, a factory, really didn't know what it was, and he ran into a person from the Red Cross who encouraged him to please come in and see the camp where the Austrian guards had immediately surrendered to him. And the Red Cross fellow asked him to go to the larger camp of Mauthausen. He called into his captain or lieutenant at the time, and they told him no, that he should, you know, continue on his mission and just check the bridges. But the Red Cross person said, "You must go there because they're going to put all of the prisoners in a cave and literally just blow it up. And he defied his orders and went into Mauthausen and just couldn't believe what he saw. In fact, his story, which was really memorialized in a letter to his mother, and then it was reproduced in, I think, 1955 as one of the newsletters for the 11th Armored Division.
Well, and from the description of the story that Wendy writes, it sounds like even though your father and his fellow soldiers generally knew what had been going on in Germany, they were still pretty unprepared for the reality of what they discovered when they got to Mauthausen.
They had never seen anything like that before. It's a vision that he carried with him for the rest of his life.
Did it weigh on him?
Oh, my gosh, yes. He could not believe that fellow human beings could treat other human beings the way these poor prisoners were. He captured some of it in some photos, and they literally took bodies out of the gas chambers and saw all the piles of bodies in the back. It was something that weighed on him for the rest of his life.
It is a powerful thought, though, that one person, or your father and his fellow soldiers, were responsible in large part for saving as many as 40,000 people.
Yes, yes. Hard to believe. And in fact, when he called in again on the radio and told them what he had found, there was disbelief. And when he took the German soldiers as prisoners, again, they didn't want to bring additional vehicles to transport the prisoners down. So he marched them because he was afraid that with the prisoners rioting, that there was no way he could secure the safety of both the prisoners as well as the German soldiers. So they marched them back down to their camp.
I gather your father spoke Polish?
He did. His parents come over from Poland, and it was the second language in the home.
And this was one of the reasons that he chose to stay, right, in Europe as the war was ending?
Well, he was there till the end of the war, mm-hmm. Yes. And one of the things that motivated him, obviously. Fortunately, he was able to speak the Polish language because that's how he was able to capture their attention.
Wendy Holden, it could not have been easy to piece these stories together, both, you know, from a logistical sense, but also just from how difficult the stories are to read and how tough they must have been to write.
They were very tough to write, and I think probably because I used to be a war correspondent, because I've written a lot about war, I'm slightly inured to it, but there are certain passages that I wrote that moved me so much that even when I was writing them, I wept. And I still can weep to think about them. And I certainly wept a lot with all the different people that I interviewed. I interviewed Holocaust survivors all over the world. I traveled and researched this on and off for nearly 2 years and had the most extraordinary encounters with people, some of whom didn't think they were going to be able to talk to me. But when we met, they were able to open up. And I thank them all so much, because it's so important to be able to chronicle these remarkable witness accounts before they die. Because, you know, I mean, we're so lucky with the three babies, Mark, Hannah and Eva. They are probably the youngest Holocaust survivors ever, of course, because of the nature of that when they were born. And they are really going to be the last of the voices of the voiceless. And when people talk about children of the Shoah, I mean, you can't have a better example of three children of the Shoah who will continue to tell people what happened then, and who are still alive and living and healthy and well and working and able to talk about their legacy of their mothers and how they themselves have gone on to have children and grandchildren, so that the whole story is never forgotten.
Larry, Wendy mentioned that when she spoke with Eva, she said she'd been waiting to tell the story for 70 years. Your father passed away some time ago. Was it his wish while he was alive that people knew this story?
Yes. In fact, he had been approached to return to Mauthausen for the 30th anniversary. And although, you know, we had read his story that was reprinted, you know, in the newsletter in 1955, But he was invited to go back for that anniversary, and quite frankly, didn't have the funds to go back. But several of his platoon mates and other family members donated money so that he could go back with my mom. And he was, in fact, like the parade marshal for this 30th anniversary. And he was just very proud of what he and his men had accomplished, and had hoped that that story would continue to live on. They had been contacted over the years by several of those that had survived, had sent letters, Christmas cards, etc. And the common theme was always, thank you for saving my life.
Are you proud of your father?
Very much.
How much did you know about the story? You said obviously the story was reprinted in the newsletter in 1955, but how well did you know the story?
That's the only way I knew the story. When I was studying history of the war, when I was in school, this would have been like the eighth grade, and we were talking about the war, and he just handed me his story and said, "Here, read this." And he didn't talk about it much, but that's how I learned the story.
You have had a chance to meet Mark Olsky, one of the surviving children who lives here in Wisconsin. What did that meeting mean to you?
It was very emotional to meet somebody who my dad, saved. In fact, when I... thanks to Wendy, had reached out to Dr. Olsky to say that I would like to meet him. His immediate response to me was, "Yes, we must meet because we have something very much in common. If it wasn't for your dad, neither of us would be here." So we had set up this dinner, and my brother and I went to meet him, and it was a very emotional night and one of celebration.
As we're having this conversation, it comes just before the 70th anniversary of Mauthausen's liberation. Anti-Semitism is on the rise in parts of Europe, and a trial of a former Auschwitz guard is underway. I am curious to get your take, each of you, on what you hope people learning about this story today get from reading it.
I think that this story will never lose its strength of feeling or its ability to move people. And that is incredibly important in these times when we have contemporary Holocausts happening around the world, maybe not on such a huge scale, but we still have people who feel it is their right to kill somebody or injure them or wound them or make them homeless simply because they don't share the same view. So what I love about this story is that although it's extremely harrowing to read and it was very harrowing to write, we are so privileged to have these representatives for the dead here to deliver their testimonies in a way that celebrates courage and defiance and, most of all, the human capacity to hope.
For me, so many people, try to tell the world that, the Holocaust never existed, and that just goes right through me every time, I hear somebody state that. And as we watch, some of these tragedies that do occur around the world, I hope this story gets out to everyone so that, everybody says history repeats itself, and if everyone becomes familiar with this story, it's my hope that history never does repeat itself, that we could never let this occur again.
Well, Larry Kosiak and Wendy Holden, it's really a privilege and an honor and really a thrill to speak with both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you.
Larry Kosiak lives in Mount Prospect, Illinois, and Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. His father, Albert Kosiak, was a U.S. Army sergeant who led a squad that liberated the Mauthausen concentration camp 70 years ago this week. Wendy Holden is a British writer and the author of the new book, Born Survivors, about three women and their children who were born while they were prisoners at the camp.
You can read a firsthand account written by Albert Kosiak of the liberation of the Mauthausen concentration camp in 1945 at WUWM.com. World War II officially ended in Europe 70 years ago this Friday, but the war still shapes much of our foreign policy today. We'll learn more when Lake Effect continues on WUWM.